Everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap here on August 12th, 2015. I'm Ruler of Time here alongside Ruler T. Chris, how have you been for the past day?
Awful, Nick. A lot happened in the past 24 hours. All of my bones are broken, except for my jaw. My jaw still works, that's why I'm able to talk to you right now.
Your ribs seem to be doing okay, too.
No, that's actually a machine that's been placed inside of me that pumps my air around my shattered ribs.
Why doesn't everyone just use that, then? I mean, you sound exactly the same. Seems like
an it filters in through the rectum, which is excessively uncomfortable, I would like to stress. Also, I'm going blind and paranoid, which is kind of weird, but it's happening. So a lot's happened in those 22 hours, Nick. A lot, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. No, actually, I'm pretty cool, Nick. I actually am a little bit amused because, once again, I got to be thankful for the fact that I am not a Jets fan.
Yeah, that was weird, wasn't it?
For those of you who don't know, and I imagine there are a lot of you because it's a manga podcast.
Everyone's just like, fuck your stupid, like, sports talk and
it's like shit. Look, once every 6 to 7 months Nick and I open up a weekly manga recap talking about a fucking NFL story. Just deal with it.
Oh, but you guys gotta talk about wrestling at some point in the show too.
Oh, well, maybe I will. Like, Nick, I think 10mm Ryuta is the Cesaro of Toriko or some bullshit. No, but if you don't know, Geno Smith, who was quarterback for the New York Jets, got in the locker room fight and got...
He didn't really get in the locker room fight.
He kind of got cold-cocked so hard he broke... His jaw is broken and the recovery time is like 6 to 10 weeks.
Yeah.
Which is like... That's not like, oh,
that's
shit,
hard,
someone...
That's a hard fucking punch.
Like, it's not like, oh, man, I got punched and I dislocated my jaw. I have to be sore for a week. It's like, someone just destroyed my face. And clearly it didn't happen on the field. Everyone's noted it's a locker room fight. And it's just that moment, like, oh my god. Like, I came so close. Like, we talked yesterday, there's like infinite universes out there. I am terrified, Nick. Terrified that somehow, like, the Monitor from DC is going to, like, it's like we're going to have like a crisis on Infinite Earths. And, like, he just mixes up sending me back to the right universe. And I get stuck in some universe where I'm, like, some fucking Jets fan that's just crying and miserable every year. Like, no! Why the Jets? I must be fatter and, like, balding at that point. Because I've just torn my hair out. And I've just given up fucking trying to take care of myself. Because I'm like, this team sucks every year. They fuck it up. Can never get a good quarterback or a good GM or a good coach.
And also, my accent never sounds right.
Yeah, and also, I'm a little bit Australian, that sometimes I'm Boston, and then now I'm Infamous Planet, oh no!
Yeah, crazy stuff. And then that guy ended up joining a team that's in the same division, so potential for them to meet twice in the same season.
Yeah, well, that would imply, that would require Geno Smith to win a job on the team. Not even necessarily starting quarterback, but he needs to win a job. I would like to say that would be really hard because it's the Jets, but Geno Smith is also really, really bad at his job.
Oh, God. Well, I think that we should just get right into it now.
Like, we've bantered long enough about sports
don't really know where to go from that.
that, like, 2% of our audience maybe are like, I'm following along with this conversation. The other 32 or the other 98 are just like, are you talking about Eye Shield or what's going on?
What's a Geno?
Yeah. Don't they make Philly cheesesteaks?
Wasn't that like a samurai character in some series or something?
Yeah, it would be.
Have our usual weekly manga to talk about this week. For those of you who missed the update, went out last night, we are going to be holding off on actually doing Shaman King until next week, mostly so that we have some proper time to process it, but also because there's not going to be any Shonen Jump next week, and we want to have something to talk about instead of, taking the week off. It's going to be the Obon Festival going on at that time. And so we're basically going to be talking about Shaman King and Fairy Tail, which is out this week instead.
Yes.
So, there you go.
And maybe for shits and giggles, I might talk about Seven Deadly Sins next week. Be like, what's happened with this in the past, like, 4 months I've stopped caring? And if, like, the first page I open to is like, oh, King's power levels exceed, I'm like, I'm done.
That was enough
of that. Oh, or Nick, we could talk about one of the 20 different Fairy Tail spin-offs that are going on concurrently.
Well, some of them did actually finish, at least.
Yes, and immediately start into new ones. Yeah, the newest one being the Sabretooth one, which I read 2 chapters of, and I was like, I don't know why you even bothered making a spinoff. You could just... It's the exact same story that you would tell with a Fairy Tail guild. Like, there's nothing different about it.
Well, it's because they were inspired so much by Fairy Tail that they, like, emulate them and have lost all of their identity.
Why bother keeping them in the story, Nick?
Well, because sometimes you like to draw a girl with short silver hair who isn't,
the Elfman's sister.
Yeah.
I was
Lysana.
There you go.
I got it.
We had to stop. We're like, what was her name? Cat girl.
Cat girl. Cat girl Strauss. I can't believe I remembered that whenever it was. I was like, what's their family name? Strauss! Never fucking comes up. Anyway.
So proud of you.
Recap portion of Weekly Manga Recap. Let's start off with Black Clover, page 25, March of the Dead. See, these zombies have more purpose than The Walking Dead. See, these ones march. They don't walk. They march.
They
walk in unison to a beat.
They follow orders, Nick. They're a united front. Also, this one has a guy with one eye covered who's crazy, who's already infinitely more entertaining and less ridiculous than the governor. He's literally having corpses explode around town on little girls, and he's still less cartoonishly evil than the governor was.
I still haven't watched that show. I've seen, like, 2 clips from that show, and I'm just like, okay, that's enough of that. Whoop!
Like, you're not missing a whole lot.
Woo!
If you watch some montage of fucking Rick screaming out, Carl! You've pretty much grasped the show.
I see that in, like, image galleries all the fucking time. People love that meme so goddamn much.
They're like any kind of meme where it's like, this character says this one thing a lot.
Carl! Yeah, or some shit like that. Anyway, so, yeah. Eye patch with eye over his eye patched eye guy is screaming at his army of zombies to destroy stuff, and explosions are ringing out because apparently his corpses can explode somehow.
Can I just note something real quick? I was trying to remember if this guy had a name. And you know how when you go to like the start of a Shonen Jump series in their magazine, they have like the like series page, so features
yeah,
like, the characters evolved.
They say this is this character with his.
Yeah. I was thinking maybe character. That guy would be there. He's not, but they have a picture of Yuno, who has the most Yuno face humanly possible, just a blank stare, completely devoid of any emotion. You could attach anything to that, like I'm angry at you, I'm hungry, I want to cry, I want to go to space. Like
he doesn't even have like a neutral expression. He has a bored expression.
Yeah.
That's how bad it is. And meanwhile, Asta... At least Asta's not doing the most Asta face, which is shiny eyes.
Yeah, he didn't see a hot dog on the floor that only got rolled
over
a couple
times. He's just
kind of
going, yeah!
Yeah.
And Noelle looks like you have said something really fucking stupid. And she is like, oh god, what am I doing in the room with this person?
It's her from when she was still like the stuck-up bitch Sundare character. And now, they haven't updated to the fact she's like, no, I'm like friendly.
Now she's like sensitive and has a crush on Asta, but she doesn't want to admit it, and she's getting picked on by literally everyone.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, so faceless mages in cloaks that just happen to obscure their eyes and heads just enough so that the artist doesn't actually have to draw any distinguishing features on them are trying to stop this guy's army of zombies, and they are stupid because they don't destroy the head. They just, you know, shoot in the chest and shoot off an arm. If you're going to try and stop advancing zombies without shooting the head, at least shoot their legs off. Come on, guys.
Well, Nick, this might be a universe where zombies aren't a thing. Like, they don't have zombie media, they don't have movies or books about it, so they don't know the logic of, like, you have to stop the brain.
Well, but it's a form of magic that this guy is using. Presumably, necromancy exists in this world. And they're clearly zombies.
Maybe he doesn't, like, read a lot of
occult
stuff. Maybe
they're stupid.
Yeah.
Okay, so... anyway, these guys actually just get eaten. Like, it's way in the background and it's obscured by a bunch of bodies, but there is definitely blood flying out in the background there. They have been devoured by zombies. That's kind of hardcore.
Oh, I'm gonna miss you, Dukin, the mage who didn't care about necromancy. The guy who, like, was in class, like, leaving, like, students, no, I need to teach you about necromancy. Psst. Don't need that teach. I'm never gonna need it. As he puts on his sunglasses, but he puts them on in a way so it covers up just like the top of his eyes to the top of his forehead, so you never see that spot.
So anyway, in the whatever building where all the important characters are, they get this message that the cap is under attack. One of the mages is like, I can make a live-action map somehow. You know, he's like, stone creation magic, GPS system, or something. It's weird, because he's got a map of the city, and there's, like, little mini explosions in it, where explosions are happening. So, yeah.
And you can see the screaming happening. So, like,
yeah.
I guess the magic's just like, I'm aware of this, what's happening, and I'm just going to create it for you. Or... my personal favorite theory, there's a magical GPS satellite up in space that's beaming all this information down to him, and he essentially has the Google Map magic spell.
Yeah, so Glasses Douche is like, is he lacing this whole area with mana and simultaneously making it visible? It's like, I guess so!
Also, you can play chess on the cover of his spell book, which I think is pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's 8x8. Yeah, huh. So... yeah, they're like, we're in trouble. Let's see, they managed to get through this barrier, so it's a skilled opponent and stuff. And Acid is like, oh, we gotta go help those people. Let's go! And he starts running out, and Glass of Douche is like, what are you doing, Asta? We don't know what's going on. You can't sense magic, so how the fuck are you going to get there? And Asta's like, I'm going to go where it's noisiest! Which is the smartest stupid thing I think he's said so far. And the guy who was, like, in the last chapter was like, I'll make you my rival! And so he's like, oh, you're so interesting, Asta! I'm gonna follow you! It's like, okay, well, great. The two girls from the last chapter, maintain the one character trait that they've demonstrated so far, which is, guys really are dumb, huh, sis? Yeah.
Well, they didn't pick up on the other character trait, which is the stoic one supposed to be like, don't call me sis, or something like that.
Yeah, she just says, yes, they are.
Like, I like to think she's just been beleaguered and beaten, like, battered down by her fucking sister's stupidity. This is the one she's like, fucking whatever.
This was the breaking point just between these two chapters.
Like, we missed the point, like, between chapters where the other sister just started, like, deep-throating fucking Manhattans because she's just tired and she's just gonna drink away the pain of her stupid sister.
Oh, God. Also, what the fuck is up with her? I'm trying to figure out if she's wearing a helmet or if this is a case like the X-Axis from Bleach, where her hair just looks like headgear because it's so weirdly shaped.
She's wearing a helmet.
I'm pretty sure, certain she is, but it's so, like, the same color as her hair when in black and white. And it's hard to tell where the helmet ends and her head begins.
There's a slight kind of, like, little shelf worth of hair you can see beneath the helmet, and then there's, like, the braid.
Very technical terms when referring to headgear on this show.
Yeah, I'm like, that shelf's worth
of
hair.
You know, the ridge,
the dangle boggle of hair that she has there, you can see. As I hover my mouse over the area, knowing full well you can't see what I'm doing.
You like circling it.
Yeah, I'm like drawing on my screen with a magic marker. Like, Nick, do you see it now? Hold on, it says it's magic.
You're doing like John Madden play-by-play.
Well, I mean, see over here, Nick. She's got the hair, but if you look over here, you can see this is clearly a helmet. And this guy's wearing a lot of eyeshadow. What's up with that? I'm going to draw a little pretty skirt on him because he's a girl now. I don't think John Madden ever laughed like that, except maybe when he was having a stroke.
Or when Frank Caliendo was playing.
Yeah. When Frank Caliendo's like, you're giving me a fat celebrity to play? Sweet! Oh, and after that I'm going to be fat Robert De Niro? Okay.
And George W. Bush, too. Okay.
I would be so upset. If I were a celebrity and Frank Caliendo impersonated me, I'd be so offended. I'd be like, can we put, like, an asterisk next to it? Yeah, he's got my voice down. I'm not that fat, though. This is kind of ridiculous. I always felt like George Bush had a big problem. Like, all right, I may be kind of a dummy. I ain't that fat,
I may talk all funny sometimes.
But I ain't not that fat, no.
Anyhow.
He's a little bit of boomer from fucking King of the Hill.
You kind of lost it.
Don't joke on a pretzel. Time to cross old George Bush off my list of impersonations. You don't need you anymore.
Alright, so Pagolian takes charge of the situation, and he's like, alright, look, I know you guys probably don't like taking orders from me, but shut the fuck up, someone's gotta take command here. Listen up. I'm gonna follow Leo and the Black Bulls kid, and we're going to head to the North District. You, Black Bulls girl, you come with me. Silver Eagles, you take the Central District, just starts dividing them up into squads, and so on and so forth.
If I was Noel, I'd be like, if I sit on your lion made of fire, am I going to get burned? Because I don't see, like, a saddle or anything.
My laugh's big enough.
That's sexual...
I'm like 15.
That's sexual harassment in and of itself. Two, aren't you going to get burned then? I'm not, like, my question is if this actually burns us, or if it's just some kind of, like, weird...
I am disgusted by you, but the top priority remains the dangerous fire.
The fact of the matter is, fire does not really have mass, so if I sit on your lap anyway and you just fall through the fire, I'm coming with you.
And then we'll die in a compromising position... And, yeah.
He's like, and your problem is? I'm like, I'll just take a cap. A magic cap.
Like the one that fucking Urza drives around or whatever.
Yeah, they're just like, hurry, bring our magic stagecoach. They just point to the corner of the buffet and there's a magic stagecoach just sitting there. Like, oh, it's just always off screen in case characters need one. Yes. Obviously.
Anyhow, so he divides them up. The female squad is still going, like, can't believe we're taking orders from a guy. They better evolve beyond this one character trait.
Maybe they're like a 1mm Yuta, Nick, where their payoff is like 6 years down the line.
I was like, I don't have a problem with, like, you know, a character whose main hook is they are a feminist or they are, you know, even if they hate men or whatever, it's just...
Give them a line that's not that trait.
Yeah, that is, you know, if you do just that, that's not a character, that's a straw man, is my point. It seems like this is purely going to be for them to eventually go, hey, I hate men, but that Asta guy sure is great.
God, like that. Isn't that going to be infuriating? Like one day.
Yeah, it'd be like, oh, no, what a waste. Pagolian actually really takes charge of the situation. He's like, yo, if we fail to protect the capital, we'll bring shame on the Magic Knights. Also, some people will probably die. Whatever you do, don't let the enemy escape. Also, try to protect people. But make sure he doesn't escape.
Primarily. Whatever you can do.
So, they disperse in different directions. And after they're gone, Charmy, the member of the Black Bulls who wanted to come along because he was interested in the food... Remember? Uh-huh. She pops out from her hiding spot underneath one of the tablecloths, and she explains that she, quote, stuck to Asta and Noel and got into the Noble Realm.
Does her guild symbol change between panels?
Yeah, which is kind of cute, actually. Like, when she's got the really super chibi face when she first comes out, her Black Bull symbol is, like, this little cow.
Oh, it's like a baby cow. Oh, okay. So it's actually supposed to be, like, two different states. Like,
yeah,
when she's...
and then it gets to the actual emblem when she, you know, is not chipified and stuff.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Clever girl.
So she's like, oh, something awful's going on. This looks like a job for Charmy. If I do good work, I may get the chance to eat even better food. But I smell something delicious, so I'll go eat that before I go fight. Again, one character trait.
Well, not only that, isn't, like, the sounds going on explosions and blood-curdling screaming? Like, it's not, like, outside, because, like, the next page is, like, a little girl being like, please don't murder me! And an explosion's going on. You're like...
It's away from this is serious, let's go and solve this problem, you know, people are in trouble, and Asta comes in to save the day, when right in the middle of that, there's this girl just like, food!
Well, it's like, what did Charmy hear that she was just like, I can stop for dessert real quick. Like, she's just like, it sounds like a lot of screaming and dying. But they won't mind if I help myself to a smackerload of honey first. She just sits down with a fucking, like...
We're doing Winnie the Pooh voices for this character from now on.
Oh, bother.
This looks like a job for Charmy. If I do good work, I might even get the chance to eat even better food.
Oh, but I smell something.
Up before going to battle.
Oh, bother. I've got my head stuck in a honey pot again.
Oh, God. Wonderful thing about Tigger is this thing real anyway. So eye patch guy corners a little girl and he's just like, hey little girl, do you like the Clover Kingdom? She's like, I love it, please stop destroying the kingdom. He's like, I hate the kingdom, so the town, the people, and you, little girl, I'm breaking it all.
This guy's
a little nuts. Yeah,
yeah. Well, I mean, it's... Have you seen, like, I'm trying to think of, like, forms of fiction where somebody's gimmick is, like, I control zombies, and they're, like, a really, like, well-adjusted man. Like, they're just, like, really, like, no, I, kind of just feel like zombies are really practical kind of combat style. Yeah, I know I'm kind of desecrating to dead. I don't think they'll mind, right?
How many examples of Mach can you think of? Because we had Giselle very recently in Bleach.
Faust in Shaman King Marie, not to spoil too much of what's going on next week, but he's pretty cray-cray.
He was a bit weird.
I'm trying to think of more zombie related characters.
Gecko Moria, his whole crew basically.
Yeah, like, they were all pretty
zombies.
All pretty wacky.
What was his name? Hayden, the doctor, whatever.
Hogback?
Hogback, yeah. I knew it began with an H, but I thought it was way weirder than that.
I think you were trying to grab someone from Naruto.
Yeah,
wasn't Hidan one of those guys?
Well, no, he was just immortal.
Okay.
Stretching it, you could say anyone who used the... Hello, dog. You could say anyone who used the Edo Tensei in Naruto. So Orochimaru is there.
Well, we all know Orochimaru wouldn't count.
He's perfectly normal and sane.
Yes. Bye! You missed me, everybody! I'm back!
Some people think I even got to have a kid!
I'm like, get out of here! This isn't even your series, you're done! You're out of the recap! All the dead are forgotten and back every couple weeks!
Naruto will never die!
He was all in the hearts of all the children! You stop talking about children's hearts! You have a restraining order against that, you know you do!
So yeah, lots of weirdos. It was an alright chapter for what it was trying to do. Just, you know, it actually added a little bit to this guy's character, and, you know, just established, okay, you know, Asta's gonna fight this guy now. And so there you go.
Yes. And he shows up in, like, a spiral of fire, and he's cut the zombies, but I guess it's worth noting that the zombies don't necessarily disappear when it happens. So I don't know, maybe his sword can't cut through zombies.
Yeah, it's gonna...
Wouldn't that be awesome? Like, his magic can't cut through people, so the rest of the series is just people sending fucking, like, unwilling, like, fucking suicide bombers at him and shit. Like, he's just like, wow, you guys really made this dark to counter my power. Like, yeah, we kind of have to throw corpses at you.
Yeah.
Like, that's our only fighting style. Otherwise, you're ridiculous. I'm like, wow. It's kind of morbid now.
Well, he's just got his original sword then, though.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, someone's got to have a plan. Like, come on, you can't keep going at this guy. Like, if I throw a lot of rocks at him, he can't get through all of them. I got through all of them. Shit.
Okay, let's move on to Bleach 638. Seething Malice, the Height of Absurdity. Which, there is no comma anywhere in that title, or colon, or semicolon, or anything. It's just Seething Malice, the Height of Absurdity, but with no pause in the middle. Seething Malice, the Height of Absurdity. Eh. Also, Mayuri on the title page is making a really weird face. But then again, he is Mayuri, so there you go.
You get a cool piece of art from Kubo there on that. And the chapter title is like one of those like bizarrely ridiculous Bleach chapter titles that I enjoy greatly.
Although it's not actually English, because it's there in Japanese too.
Honestly, translated it, and yep. Like to make it make sense. Otherwise, it'd be like the malice of which seething is the highest, or some bullshit.
Yeah, some shit. Yeah. So
from hell,
Mayuri is still fighting with Pyranitas, who is a giant left arm with an eye in the palm. And Mayuri just got done saying, oh, you're the left arm of the Soul King. And Pyranita is like, left arm, not name. Name, Pyranita. Pyranita, Pyranita, not have mouth. Hard to say, weird name.
Tongue-tied. Have no tongue.
Logical
loop. Must murder self. I'm like, wow, that was a really easy fight. This was slightly less disappointing than the fucking brain in the jar killed itself from being like, you're too strong!
Oh, God. So, yeah. God. So, Mayuri is like, your name is too long for me to say, so I'm just gonna keep on calling you Left Arm. In fact, that's too long, too. You're gonna be handy from now on. Some shit.
Well, I do like that the thing tries to say his name, and Mayuri's like, bullshit, I discovered you, I get to name you what I want. Like, just treat him like, no, you're a fucking science experiment.
I get to call you what I want, because you're a thing, because it's such a dick thing to say.
But it's like the idea, like, no, explorer's rights, I get to name you.
Oh, God. So, yeah, he goes on about something for a very long time. Just, like, fucking words and...
Basically, the thing fucking can put its nerves in the ground, even, like, shoot them out somehow.
And it can turn... I guess it takes the whole Reishi thing that Quincy's do, and it actually transformed the ground surrounding it also into hands. Whatever.
It's shooting his nerves out.
And it turns stuff into hands, and,
Well, no, I assume he can control it however he wants. It's just exactly like Remy. He's not imaginative to do anything else but be like, oh, hands! Smash!
At least it doesn't have a brain.
So yeah. Well, I hope that's the secret of this, like, in its, like, thumbs, like, oh, and that's the brain of Rayo!
So, Mayuri reveals that he's got Go-Go Gadget Extendo arms at one point, as he, like, tries to climb up a wall, but then Pyranita just turns the wall into a hand and kind of like slaps him and then tries to crush him. And Mayuri's like, ah, but I have explosive reactive armor because, also I totally gypped your guys' Reishi techniques because spirit. You know, Soul Reaper, like, floating on air techniques don't work here, so I stole your Reishi ones, and look, check it out, I can do a Hirin Kyaku, blah, blah, blah. And he's just like, yep, yeah. And so, you know, you can only spread your nerves through solid matter, so if I don't touch it, it can't get me. Also, I somehow got a snake with a human head around your pinky, and I'm gonna pinch it off.
I got a man. It's like some weird human face on like a snake, like a, I don't know what the fuck it is. And then he like smushes a duck's mouth and that like activates the explosion. It's this weird, like you're like, all right, that's quintessential Mayuri. do we get an explanation for what either of these things are? You're just supposed to be like, nah, he has, like, really warped, like, he's so much of a freak, he's like, I can't have a button, I better put a decapitated duck's head on top of it that's still alive, so every time I smash it, it's like, ow!
So, then the pinky drops to the ground, and Mary sprays it with a preserving solution so that he can collect the sample, but the pinky, is still controlled by Pernita, and it launches out nerve endings and infects Mayuri's arm, and his hand starts to break itself, and then something happens, and he, like, draws string around his hand, and he's like, I reconfigured the arrangement of the nerves, blood vessels, and muscles! Don't think you can take over my body that easily, Pernita! Like, I guess he just did instantaneous surgery on himself. Fucking hell. Whatever. Mayuri's bullshit, the chapter.
Yeah, I mean, that's essentially it. I don't know what Mayuri did, and, like, there's part of me that's like, don't try to figure it out. Just accept that he did what he did.
Just because.
Yeah.
I'm getting so sick of Mayuri chapters now. I'm just like, please stop.
Oh, are you already, like, over, you're already, like, blown out on, like, the hand enthusiasm, like, fucking one of the Quincy's just a giant hand.
Well, it's just going to be a setup for Mayuri's bullshit always wins because...
Oh, of course.
He can just do things, and it's like, well, yeah, he's a hand. He's still a hand. Okay, that's it. Whatever.
Nick, do you really think that they're gonna kill off Mayuri? Like, that they're just gonna kill off one of the big captains and then not, you know, do anything with it from there on in?
Well, I mean, you know, in order to do that, you would have to be a really obscure captain, like Yamamoto, or Ukitake, or Hitsugaya, or...
I think that's all of them. Oh, Kensai.
Oh, well, Ichimaru, technically. And Tosin.
Well, he lives on in my heart. With the Orochimaru.
Tweeting each other.
Hey, did you see those school kids that walked by? You know I didn't, asshole. But it just comes out like... Oh my god, like their tweets to each other. It's just nothing but like... Aah! Like a vine that he just keeps auto-playing over and over. Just toasted tweeting, toast like, how do I make this stop? Just slamming his fingers.
He can't find the mute icon.
Every time he gets close, fucking Richimaru sends another one and it knocks it all away and starts over. It's like, you son of a bitch!
I know how to stay. Let's move on. There's no fairy tale this week, so let's move on to Food Wars. Shokugeki no Soma. Oh, fuck, this is usually where I take a break.
I know, sorry. Do you want me to do it, Nick?
Just do enough for me to take a drink real quick.
Yeah, sure. So, Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma, Chapter 130, A Pride of Young Lions. And I don't remember the one guy's name. Masuka, it's right there. Or Mimisaka? Memoron? I'm going to call him Memoron.
Subaru. Like the car.
Oh, that is a good one. All right. So, Subaru and Soma are now teaming up to make their famous special moon meatball curry stew.
Countdown curry mapo noodles. It also says it right there.
I wanted to give it my personal name, Nick. I wanted to add a touch of Rolo to Soma this week. And I'm sorry that you shat all over my dream.
A touch of Rolo.
I wanted to sprinkle it and add my own distinct flavor. I wanted to be like Soma, where I made a dish uniquely my own. You're like, I'm taking this back. You're wrong. I'm just going to leave Fairy Tail and the other bullshit to you.
So yeah, they're putting up orders almost in sync with each other. Customers are pouring in, and Megumi is seeing to different people's needs. And she has a flashback to when she was specifically taught on hosting, basically. And remembers that the advice given to her was, the ideal for customer service is 100% satisfaction for all customers, but the reality of limited time and manpower makes that difficult. When things are at their most crowded, you must calm yourself. And basically, and then prioritize what is most important for whom. So, essentially, Megumi is not going around seeing to everyone's individual needs. She's just like, oh, well, that kid, you know, has to have an area for, like, a baby stroller. Maybe, oh, and also, I'll make sure that they have a spoon because kids ain't gonna fucking use chopsticks and that kind of thing. So, the most obvious and apparent needs of people are what she's focusing on.
It seems like she's favoring children. So, we all know Infamous Planet is sitting here being like, oh, fucking children.
Really?
If you listen to Secret World Sunday, man, not only does he hate children, he hates, like, his, like the children and his family. It's
wow.
I'm kind of concerned, man.
Does he think of them like annoying pets that other people have or something like that?
I'll put it this way. He posted up, like, a tweet earlier today that was like, my little brother's been sick and vomiting all day, and I'm pretty happy about that because it means I can sleep in. This is a secret time. If people don't see Secret World Sunday, you're like, oh my god, Infamous is a monster. A silly monster who doesn't read books and can't be bothered.
Oh god. Anyway. Also, people from the Home Cooking Society have, as a favor, brought all sorts of wonderful little helpful gifts for Megumi. Like traditional paper lanterns that they can set up to add to the atmosphere surrounding the cart. And basically, like, we want to make sure that, you know, you don't have to fucking drop out. Which is making me probably turn around and be like, yeah, thanks, Soma.
What? I'm planned none of this. I brought Subaru.
So, people are still kind of overwhelming the cart, though, and, you know, Kuga's turned around and is like, ah, oh, what's the matter? Are you still having trouble keeping up with your line? Eh. And even Soma is starting to feel the pressure, and you know, Subaru's like, man, if we slow down even a little bit, then, you know, that means that Kuga's gonna pull ahead, and we might end up with the black, but you're not gonna actually meet your actual goal of, you know, besting him. So people are rushing around. And even Megumi is, like, having trouble dealing with all the people because she has to handle basically everything except for the cooking. But at that moment, finally, Ikumi? She arrives and is like, I found another cleavage-bearing and midriff-wearing outfit besides my America bra, guys. Check it out. Yes. Bull society. The bulls are not my boobs. Stop it.
Stop pouring curry on them, for the love of God.
Stop it. You may not use my cleavage as your bowl. Stop it right now.
It is not a dish.
You're a
great That's what the back of the shirt says. If you look, turn to the back.
I like to dress sexy, but it is not for your benefit. Stop it. I will kill you all. Anyway.
Actually, she just shows up to make pork buns.
Yeah, she does. And she has this big moment where she's like, I can sense the instant the crust of the pork buns turns just the right shade of crispy golden brown. That's the moment the meaty juices inside begin their quiet dance. The moment when they're cooked just bright. Just bright? Just right. I can catch that moment with my eyes closed, so sit back and leave them to me. Got it? So, now, basically, she's handling one aspect of, you know, the dishes that have to be prepared and stuff. And they're like, oh, that's great. And, like, Mr. What's-His-Name, who's still just sitting back and doing nothing, is like, oh, that's good! I brought the benches. Good luck, guys.
Bye.
But then, also, Aldini arrives. And so he's like, ah, oh, it looks like you're in a bit of a jam, Yukihira. It's honestly rather embarrassing. But if you insist, I guess I could be persuaded to help you out. And then his brother's immediately like, hey, can I use this burner? I'll help you boil up noodles. And so I was like, oh, thank you. It's like completely stealing his thunder. Because like, ah, oh, maybe if you beg on your hands and knees. And it's just like, oh, here, I'll help you out with this.
I'll help you out for free.
God damn you. But, you know, he says in his very, you know, tsundere rival kind of manner, is like, you're not allowed to fizzle out and fail like a loser here, understood?
I really need to catch up on the other chapters of this, because, like, they really seem like it's an important rivalry between these two characters. And I'm like, alright, wasn't it between fucking Kurikiba and Hayama and Soma? Aren't those, like, his big rivals? Who are you?
Did you ever read their first showdown?
No, I've only read the first two volumes of the series and came out since, you know, we started. But
yeah, basically, they had this sort of informal showdown in a class at one point, and Takumi basically sort of declared himself Soma's rival after Soma impressed him. But then after that point, when they were in the Fall Classic finals, Aldini went up against Subaru in the tournament. And Subaru's big thing was not only just copying people, but he would also have them put up their most prized cooking tool in the match. And he would win it from them and basically steal their spirit. And so they had this, Takumi and his brother had this, like, large cutting kind of tool that two people could use, but also one person could use, because it was this big, long thing with two handles. And so, basically, Subaru beat him and took it. And so Soma got really pissed off and was like, if I beat you, you have to return every tool you've ever stolen to everyone else. Anyone. So, yeah.
Good job, Soma.
Yeah. So, it's actually kind of important that Takumi has a little bit of interaction with Subaru here, because there's sort of like, he doesn't really remark on it, but it, you could kind of expect that there might be a little bit of tension there, because, you know, Subaru's just like, oh, well, he's actually... I mean, it took me a long time to actually match up with Yukihira Speed, but he's actually matching it naturally, and so, you know, Takumi immediately turns around, he's like, you're kind of slow, aren't you? And it kind of gets Subaru fired up and gets him back to work and stuff.
Alright, then. And, now I know.
Yeah, so anyway, everyone is basically hitting their stride, people are getting served, and everything is moving along. And Kuga looks over and he's like, oh, I get it. Soma Yukihira's booth wasn't ready at first. He never stopped building it across these last 4 days. And now it's finally complete. And so, yeah. We then cut to the end of the day, and announcements are made about how the rankings in the central campus, the top sellers, and it's like, in third place, the Spanish Cooking Society. In second place...
Oh, it's like in the corner, like, Arriba! Like a bunch of, like, sombreros getting thrown into it. You never cut to them. You never actually see if they're as racially stereotyped as those 2 seconds make them out to be.
And, like, one tiny word bubble next to them is, like, that's Mexico, not Spain. And then in second place, the Chinese Food Society's restaurant, Kuga. And... Kuga, of course, immediately knows he's beaten him, because Soma has beaten him with his street guard. And so he just has this big Yukihira! You still caught on the Mexico Spain thing?
I thought of something like more offensive, I don't know if I should say. Stop it. Like when the Chinese Food Society
wins. No, 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 no.
And they get second.
No.
Alright. Don't do it. I won't. I'll play by the rules. Man.
So, yeah, that's the end of the chapter. Soma has...
I'll be Judd Nelson. I'll write my fucking book report, even though I'm going to have what's-his-name do it for me anyway. It doesn't actually follow the rules.
What the fuck?
You haven't watched Breakfast Club, Nick?
Oh, right.
Yeah. They did their homework at the end, kind of.
Yeah, they...
I think their own interpretation of it. One fifth of it.
They had the nerd do their work for them anyway.
Yeah, well, he's the one who's going to.
That was awful.
Oh, so you get to burp on camera, but I can't put my hilarious joke in.
Anyway. So, yeah, Soma emerges triumphant after, I guess, the fourth day? They say he was building across 4 days. Does that mean this is the fourth day or the fifth day? I don't know.
Fourth day, I believe.
I don't know. So, I'm not sure if that means there's, like, 1 day left in it or what. But, yeah. Soma basically...
I thought they said this was the final day.
I'm not sure. I'm sure that they said in, like, the last chapter, but I don't have it open, so...
Yeah.
What'd you think?
I was a really good chapter this week. I've heard a lot of varying thoughts on... the chapters this week. Some people have been like, this chapter was definitely the best, this one's definitely the best. I have what I think's the best. I wouldn't be Soma this week, but I still see why Soma was really good this week. It's definitely one of those chapters where you're like, oh, cool, you did, like, the friendship is important thing, but you didn't actually have to fucking cram it down our throats or have the characters literally say it to the camera, like, it happens every fucking week in Fairy Tail, because that is the answer of essentially how he won this. He didn't have necessarily the best food or necessarily the best environment, but because these bonds he's built throughout his time, and because he had a creative idea, these people, by, you know, came together in the moment of his need, and they helped him overtake the other guy. I can't remember
Kuka. His name.
Kuka. There you go. So I thought that's pretty cool. I enjoyed that. So very good chapter all around.
It also builds up, you know, how Soma is such a weird, you know, exception to how everyone else acts in, you know, the school, because he is not this ruthless, looking out only for himself competitor. Whenever he's beaten someone in a Shokugeki, he has gone to lengths to try to befriend them, and basically because he understands the value of learning from people instead of just, you know, beating them and then dismissing them and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, we saw it reiterated when he came back from Stavier Week and, you know, started taking on challengers, and then, you know, all he wanted in exchange for defeating them was for them to teach him so that he could learn more and stuff. And all these people are people that that came to help him are people that he has beaten in Shokugeki before, except for Megumi, of course. And he managed to defeat them, but also befriend them at the same time. And so they're willing to come and bail him out when he really needs them to.
Yeah, and I just think it works kind of in a cool way to have these characters show up, like these side cast characters, because we're kind of, I don't know, it's weird. Again, I haven't read, there's like, what, maybe 3 or 4 volumes I just haven't read at this point. Actually, probably more than that, probably like 5 or 6. That there's development in that maybe would establish better that core cast. But it's kind of cool to me seeing what I thought was going to be like our core cast of, you know, Megumi, Soma, and then presumably Hayama and Kurokiba. But seeing it's like, no, actually, the meat girl, Aldini, his brother, you know, Subaru, like, these are, like, also characters who are going to be part of this core group. Like, they're the ones who show up in this moment of need, not, like, Alice and her team or anything like that. Like, I think it's just kind of cool to be, like, these all people that matter.
It makes it seem like Alice's group is much more their own separate group than that. Which, yeah. Alice is the only one out of those 3 that Soma's defeated before, too. So you haven't seen that part either.
Yeah, I'm like, no, spoilers!
I've spoiled so much of this series for you!
What are you, a ghost? You're like, I'm the spoiling ghost! And guess what? Snake is Dumbledore! I'm like, well, that was a pretty obvious one. And did you guess that the last Horcrux is a snake? I'm like, oh.
Yeah, I mean
that wasn't that hard.
Did you guess that Harry was a Horcrux? Well, a lot of people did, yeah.
Did you know that Harry's dad was actually a douche? Like, that's not really a spoiler. It's kind of like a reveal, but it's not really like, you've ruined my context of the series. Well, fine, fuck you. I guess you know everything about Harry Potter then.
I'm just going to leave you alone.
Did you know that the guy from Gryffindor, who's part of the Golden Fire Goblet thing, dies? Cedric is his name? Question mark?
What the fuck are you talking about?
Wasn't Cedric Diggory?
He was a Hufflepuff.
Well, no, he was part of, not Gryffindor, just whatever the fucking school.
Hogwarts.
Yeah, he was their Hogwarts candidate, and then Harry Potter got his bullshit on the special one, like, ticket in.
Yeah.
I say this having not read the 4th book, yet somehow I did a book report on it. I think it was like, we're supposed to make a diorama. And I think at the time, Burger King was like selling these like goblets.
Oh, cover. God.
They were selling these goblets from the Lord of the Rings. And I think I just covered one in fucking tinfoil and put it on a box. And I was like, here you go. It's the Goblet of Fire. And we wanted it to be like that scene from Simpsons where Lisa's like, and it's the cane from Citizen Kane. Like, there's no Goblet of Fire in the Goblet of Fire. It's a metaphorical term. I'm like, oh. Whoa.
Okay. Citizen Kane. Oh, God. Anyway. My Hero Academia. Number 54, Re-Ingenium. So, last time, Todoroki basically told fucking Ida to remember what the fuck you...
Pick your shit up, boy. Yeah.
So, Ida has a flashback to when he first encountered Deku, and basically he was talking about how awesome his brother was, and how proud he was of him, and how much he looked up to him and stuff. And so Todoroki, you know, says, you know, never forget who you want to become, as he and Deku continue to try and fight Stain. And so he also remembers, oh yeah, I call myself Ingenium because I was going to beat that guy. But then he thinks, what am I doing? My friends are here having to protect me. They're bleeding for me. I took on my brother's name so I could remind him of his crime, but nothing's changed since the entrance exam. And, you know, I've been short-sighted. I've only been seeing what mattered to me. And he also remembers a conversation that he had with his brother, who we find out is actually considerably older than Ida is, because he's like 15 years older. And weird bit where Ida is like 10 and he's acting like a robot while talking to his brother. I'm not sure why.
I imagine it's maybe a joke that makes more sense in Japanese.
Maybe. I don't know. So, you know, he's like, brother, you are so cool. Teach me how to be a hero. And, you know, it's kind of funny because Ida says, you know, I want to know why you're a hero. And his brother just says, to be popular. He's like, I'm only half joking about that. But, you know, with grandpa and mom and dad, they were heroes. And I've heard basically everyone expected me to just be one. But, you know, I really like people who, you know, who would find a lost child and take them to a lost child center. I've always thought, you know, those sorts of people were the coolest. And so he's like, well, why aren't you a lost child center worker then? He's like, no, that's why not what I mean. Look.
He's like, because that's not a real fucking position, stupid, smacks him.
Yes, there is. He's like, believe me when I say that you're way smarter than I was at your age, Tenya, and you have better reflexes too. So, oh, you look up to me that much? Well, I guess that makes me a great hero then. You know, joking around with him and stuff.
Like in the corner, Baymax starts inflating. You're like, I don't like the way this is going. I know where this story goes. And it was mediocre.
That movie was overrated. How the fuck does that have, like, all the goddamn accolades and the 90 blah blah percent on Rotten Tomatoes and the fucking Best Picture Oscar, Best Animated Picture Oscar? Ah! Not a good movie. That was a good movie. It was not a great movie.
I was like, hey, I'm not going to poop on it. It's definitely average, though. Could use more Go-Go, less Honey Melon. What, I don't remember their names.
I would just like more of all of them, honestly. It's called Big Hero 6, not the one kid and his robot and nobody else. The others are there, too, sometimes.
It's not called Baymax, his bud, and then others.
You know, if it were actually about the whole group, then, you know, those other, you know, how many fucking were there?
There were six kids, or five kids, if you include Hero.
It was Honey Lemon, Go-Go, yeah, four. You know, those four, you know, would have actually showed up in some scenes where it wasn't all four of them. Like, individuals would have talked to people aside from Hero. Then it would have been Big Hero 6. But no.
That sounds ridiculous, Nick. I can't imagine that. Those characters, I don't know. There was a very thin thread joining them at the hip.
No superhero movie focusing on a team of six could possibly focus on more than two.
Yeah. Well, it'll never happen, Nick. We should just be happy that we got all those heroes in the same movie at once.
It would be the third highest grossing film of all time if you did do that. It's an impossible concept to execute.
Nick, there's no way you could have gotten a better Marvel property that you put that many characters in, and they were all on the same screen. Whoever thought we'd get a movie where Go-Go and Honey Lemon were in the same movie? I know they're from the same comic, but to see them both on the same screen at the same time kind of blew my mind a little bit.
You know, Go-Go and Honey Lemon, and, you know, the
Chop Chop, and Chop. Mr. Breathfire, I don't remember their names.
Anyway, so, this one page doesn't want to load for me. What the fuck? So Ida, you know, basically despairs, you know, he's like, I don't, you know, I can't let this happen, you know, these two guys are going ahead of me to defend me, I can't let this happen, I don't want to be left in the dust. And he suddenly surges forward, as it looks like Todoroki is finally going to get cut by Stain again, and Ida kicks the hell out of his sword, and fucking breaks the blade off. Which, that's pretty cool.
That is pretty fucking bamf. And, like, an awesome two-page spread. Like, it's one of those, like, 2.5 kind of page spreads, but it's an awesome shot of him.
2.5, it goes a little bit around the page.
Yeah, it kind of goes around. 1.5, I guess, rather. Right. But no, he just, like, kicks the sword straight off. An awesome fucking piece of art.
And yeah, and so, of course, importantly, this means that Ida has shaken off the paralysis as well.
You're like, fuck Daniel Bryan. I want Ida's now got the best knee in the business. Fucking Daniel Bryan never broke no goddamn sword, and boom, did it. We got a wrestling reference in there. Yay! Internet high five!
Actually, he more kicks it than needs it. Anyway, so, they're like, oh man, the process has worn off, and Ida says, look, this had nothing to do with either of you, so I'm sorry. That's why I swear I won't let you two lose any more blood here. And Todoroki's like, well, I've already got the open wound, so you can't really do much about that unless you instantly coagulate it all, but, you know, I understand your sentiment, so, cool.
Damn friendship, Nick.
Yeah.
But once again, they didn't have to, like, turn to the screen and be like, it's because friendship that we're going to keep going, right? Nakama.
So, Stain, you know, gets a little bit pissed
off. And then Araka shows up and her top falls off.
This seemed very unlikely. I actually wear more than just a string bikini. How did this happen?
I don't know. I'm so confused, but I do feel the need to bend over precariously a lot. I'm like, hold on, Nick, who wrote this chapter? I see, they did a trade for 1 week.
Apparently Mashima Hiro was just able to go and say, my name is Hiro, you should let me write the story about heroes.
and the commander Shunjo's like, Gar, that sounds like a pretty good plan to me. You're hired.
Wait a minute. You're not the chief executive of Shonen Jump.
Of course
you're
I am.
You're the mascot.
It's just a guy with a regular body, but he just has the head of the pirate mascot. And like a suit. There. You figured me out, did you? I'm sure I had you that one. What gave it away? Was it the eye patch? In fact, you talk like a pirate. Hey, what does that mean?
Yeah, that'd be racist.
Yeah, you ain't be needing to bring those harsh words in here, hero. You get out there and you draw that slutty hero magazine.
And by the way, we prefer the term Buccaneer Americans.
Yes, sir. My proud people. We raped and pillaged our way up the coast for a reason, I have you know. I don't really like you anymore, Mr. Chomp.
So anyway, Stain gets pissed off that he is recovered, and then he says of, you know, Ida's apparent, you know, new self-confidence, you know, you're a faker who prioritizes his own selfish desires, a cancer on this society warped by heroes. Someone needs to correct the system, man. So Todoroki is just like, oh, come on, you're just a fundamentalist, come on. And he says, you know, don't listen to him, Ida. But Ida says, actually, he's right. I actually have no right to call myself a hero, but still, I won't let him break me, because if I break, then Ingenium's really dead. And Stain gets so pissed off, he has an art style change.
He gives him that whole badass art.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm angry about this. You know what I like, though, about this? Like, I'm so satisfied with the idea. I cannot wait for someone to beat the shit out of Stain. Like, Stain's, like, an effective villain in that you're kind of like, oh, he has an interesting viewpoint. But I think what makes him most interesting is the fact that he's just wrong. Like, you kind of look at his philosophy and you're like, I don't agree with you enough that I'm like, I'm rooting for you. I want to see the heroes whoop your ass because you actually still are a monster despite the fact that you have a holier-than-thou attitude. It just has, like, a cool mantra that I'm like, it's gonna be really satisfying when someone finally beats this guy.
Yeah, it's like he's taking isolated incidents of people who are heroes just to be selfish and saying it's the entire system that's corrupt and so heroes shouldn't exist at all, you know.
And my strategy to figure that is to murder them. You're like, yeah, it's not.
You're a little bit psycho. Yeah.
You're kind of a freak.
I don't have a nose.
Yeah, I lost my nose. You don't know what it's like. I can't wear sunglasses. I guess that's it. But still, it gets really bright out and my eyes hurt.
Yeah. the hero that initially got attacked suddenly shouts out to them, like, he's just after me and the dude in the white armor, so forget fighting back, just get out of here. But Todoroki says, actually, I don't think he's going to let us. He went through a clear change a minute ago, and I think that we've really pissed him off. He's not going to let us escape now. Todoroki also, meanwhile, starts analyzing what he thinks is going on with Stain, and he thinks to himself, the blood type thing adds an element of uncertainty, and he's got to get close, and it doesn't last long, so his quirk isn't what makes him strong. I'll bet he tries to avoid fighting multiple opponents at once, and before the pros show up, he's going to desperately try to kill Ida, and the guy's already paralyzed. So we've got to really be careful, because if he's serious, then, we're screwed. And he's really tenacious. I don't know why I wanted to say tenate there.
He's really tenate-y, you know what I mean? Like, no?
Ida recognizes that his reciprocating engine is broken. Apparently it was damaged when he kicked Stain's sword in half. So he's like, hey, can you use your power to regulate temperatures? And so he's like, I don't know. It seems like a bad idea. But he's like, freeze my leg for me without blocking the exhaust pipes. And Stain throws some knives at them, and immediately Ida just sticks his arm right in front of Todoroki to block it, and eats the attack instead. And Ida's like, oh, come on, do it already. You know, this is our chance, basically, to catch him off guard. Meanwhile, Deku's also making his own plan, and he's like, okay, if I can manage to use my power, I can jump up towards Stain, because he's, like, perched above them now. And, so, basically, let me see if I can actually follow this correctly. He starts to move. Ida manages to freeze the area that Ida is talking about. Then he grabs the knife from his arm and rips it out with his teeth.
Yes.
Because that thing's serrated, too. That thing must hurt like a motherfucker.
Well, you actually see he gets hit with two knives, and one of them looks like it goes straight through the arm, or maybe not. Maybe that's the sound, like the action effect happening, but it looks like the other one might go straight through his arm.
I think that there's only one.
Yeah, it might. Well, no, there's two. There are definitely two blades, because he gets hit with one, and then Stain throws a bigger knife, and that's the one that pins his hand to the ground.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. Yeah, he throws a second one later. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe he's just going for the. I think he manages to get out the smaller one that's closer to his head first, and then he goes for the larger one in his hand.
Yeah.
But anyway, the point is, like, his arms are useless, but he's like, it's okay. Who needs arms? And he takes off into the air and starts to come in on Stain. They have this, like, sort of head, you know, mid-air confrontation, but Deku also comes flying in from the side as well. And they simultaneously roundhouse and just fucking hook him at the same time. And, he gets wrecked. And that's the chapter.
This was my chapter of the week. Far and away, I will fight you if you try to say something else is better. Even though I can agree with you that the other chapters are really good this week, I was like, how can anything be better than this? Because it has
that one
such
fucking page.
An awesome end to it, where both of them just go at it, you know, Deku, like, I two jumps, can I manage that? And, you know, Ida tearing out a serrated blade with his teeth so he can go into the air, and they both have this speech in mid-air where it's like, right now, my legs, my fists are all I need, and, like, connect at the same fucking time. You have Todoroki there just being like, go, like, fucking the shot of just them fucking just socking Stain in his stupid fucking face and just seeing his mouth going like all fucking directions. It's so awesome. Like, fuck, that's just so cool. Absolutely fantastically done. You know, just putting so much, like, swell to it so when they both connect with it, there's so much emotion behind it. And it's on one hand, it's cool because, you know, Ida gets his moment. He gets to look cool. He gets to show off, and, you know, this was his ultimate little arc here, so it's cool he gets to be a part of it. But at the same time, you're like, yeah, and it's also cool seeing Deku, you know, using his power to his fullest, getting a good shot at. I don't think Stain's done. I'm sure he's going to get up from this, and probably a big hero is going to have to show up to actually send this away. Maybe Endeavor will show up or something like that. But it's just a really satisfying end to this. I know some people have commented on the fact they're like, well, how does this relate to, you know, Ida's whole blah blah blah, you know, like, we always regret not talking to him that day or whatever. I believe the obvious answer is it probably doesn't, and Horikoshi at the time wanted something to build up drama, and then afterwards, like, I don't know if it has to really tie in that much. That's the feeling I get from this, because I really don't see, unless something ridiculous happens at the end of this, it really, I can't see a reason why Ida would turn backwards, because his development has definitely moved him in a better forward direction from this. So I think it was one of those things of, at the time, it was used to build tension, you know, maybe a cheap tactic, but the result was so satisfying, I couldn't give a fuck.
Right. Okay. Brief note before we move on to One Piece. Nisegoi has another plot where someone might have to leave.
What's her name?
Marika.
Has Marika died yet?
Well, no, she might have to leave and go somewhere else because her mother wants her to go to Kyushu. This has happened with Chitoge and Tsugumi and fucking everyone. And, you know, Yui, and now... It's just going to be, like, everyone now, isn't it? Next arc is going to be about Onodera having to leave, move away somewhere.
She's like, oh, no, my mom's moving the bakery to another town, and I'm going to have to move with her. And then at the last day, they'll be like... Surprise, guys! My mom's stuck in a very, you know, restrictive lease that she can't get out of, and she's stuck here and miserable, so I can stay and enjoy my childhood romance!
Hey.
Well, I keep that internal. I actually just say, we don't have to move, guys. It's like this honey pot.
Alright. One Piece!
What's stuck in this honey pot? Oh, baller! I got into another series again!
Chapter 796, Soldier's Conviction.
Color page.
Yeah. Swimsuits.
Mm-hmm.
Nami's butt.
We only get these every so often. See, it's weird, because I actually have the poster then of the last time they had a swimsuit one. Nami's not as predominantly featured in that one, so I feel like that one's, like, less suggestive for people. If they see it, they're like, oh, okay, no, it's like two female characters, but they're like in the sides there. I'm more concerned with the fact there's like five dudes in Speedos. Like, what's that, Chris? And I'm like, well, yeah, Jump sent it to me. But cool color page. I always love Oda's color spreads. Always just so fucking colorful and so full of like movement and things like that. So goofy.
Also, Usopp is wearing swim trunks that say lie turns into reality, which reminds me of Aisho 21.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, so we start off on the southern shore of Dressrosa.
Also, hold on. Big problem here. Chopper's in the water. He should be sinking. He's a Devil Fruit user. I know he has the inflatable, but that's ridiculous here. In fact, there's like three Devil Fruit users about to fall in the ocean. This is all a big, big problem. Hold on. I need to write a letter to Oda. Dear Ass Face. Sorry. Sir Ass Face.
Anyway. Suddenly, fucking Sengoku is approached by, some other, high-ranking naval people.
No, Nick,
fucking it's... Sengoku and Tsuru.
Sengoku approaches Sengoku? Nick, that's ridiculous.
Sengoku, no, what am I talking about saying? Fucking...
Isho Fujitora?
Yeah, Fujitora. Shit.
Just call him Fujitora. They call him Isho, I can't remember that as much, but Fujitora is more memorable. Because remember, he's the purple tiger.
So, yeah, they're like, oh, what are you guys doing here? And I love how Sengoku is just like, I'm chilling, got my snacks, nom 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 nom.
I'm like, good for you. I didn't know if you were going to have a thing after you left the whole group, but you're like, nah, I'm an inspector general, which does something, I guess.
Look, I've got a tie and shorts.
And the one character who I think, maybe more than anyone, I want to know more about, fucking Tsuru, because she's such a weird character. She was in the most like high-ranking meetings of the Marines back in the day, and her Devil Fruit power apparently lets her turn people into laundry. So, fucking, like, I need to know what this chick does. She's got some.
So anyway, they're like, what are you doing here? Exactly. Why haven't you captured the Straw Hats? And he's like, I rolled the dice! And you can't go against the dice when you're a gambler. And they're like, God damn it, Fujikura.
You fucking basket of ass.
You eccentric asshole. Why do we only hire eccentric people to be our fucking admirals?
No, you got one guy who wasn't eccentric. Yeah.
He's a monster, though.
Throws fire in people, lob in people's faces a lot. That's kind of eccentric in its own way.
Yeah.
Actually, I guess that you say it, though, Kizaru's not all that eccentric. If kicking people in the face at light speed is eccentric, yeah.
So they're like, okay, what the fuck? And then suddenly Manchuri appears, and she's like, I'm looking for dandy donors from the Navy! And they're like, oh, she's so tiny and adorable!
I wish I was there in that scene, because I'd just be like, look how cute she... Oh, no! Someone's crushed the adorable thing that talks like a three-year-old! Oh, no! But, you know, like, someone get that banana over there as a devil fruit now. Give it to somebody who's less annoying.
Like, so that works when you cry, right?
Yeah,
what's your point? Yeah. Oh, God, stop it!
Why do you only go for the testicles? It produces the most tears.
So, yeah, she's like, we're not actually supposed to show ourselves to strangers, but...
I hate it so much!
But I just wanted to help heal everyone I could in secret! So they're like, well, what's that got to do with us? And then we cut to the town center, and, fucking... Oh, I knew this guy's name. I did. I forgot it, though. The announcer from the Coliseum is...
Gat! Gat! Gats or Gats?
Right, Gats is...
I only remember because of the Toriko theme song. Gats! Gats! Gats!
So Gats says, after 10 long years, our king will return to his throne and be the ruler of our country once again. Everyone's like, yay! Then we cut to, the...
King Elizabello.
Well, I'm trying to remember what the fuck they actually call this building, because it's, I guess, the palace, but ruined, I guess. Yeah. King Elizabella, though, is like...
Well, actually, I think it was King Elizabella II.
Yeah. So they're like, oh, the nation's mad. They were tricked by a pirate, blamed their king, and rejoiced in the temptations of wealth and violence. Only by witnessing the terror of death did they finally come to their senses and wish for a land of peace. Riku's like, you're fucking writing a goddamn book over there, you asshole. That, we know this already. Shut up. Stop talking to yourself. Ugh. Anyway.
I just thought you'd like it. You always liked poetry before.
Yeah.
Well, now I don't. I'm old.
So he's like, yo, I just don't know. Riku's like, I don't know if I'm capable of making them happy anymore. If only I was some kind of god king who could prevent natural disasters. And Elizabeth's like, whoa, are you hungry for power? What the fuck, you crazy man?
What you talking about, Riku?
No, I'm just saying I want to be able to, you know, actually make my people happy, and I don't know if I...
And if they could control the laws of space and time, that'd be pretty sweet, too.
Yeah, I get so much ass.
They're like, that's what you're gonna use it for? Yeah, what else would you do with it?
I'm lonely, my wife is dead.
Yeah.
I only had one daughter, she's dead. I'd like to have some more kids.
Yeah, you know, get some... Okay. Look, I'm just saying...
Elizabeth's like, wait a minute, what about Viola?
yeah, I guess we could kill her. and then I'll have a daughter, and boom, I got a new heir to the throne. Actually, King,
what about Rebecca?
Yeah, the lineage would still go with the first legitimate born of your firstborn, so it would be Rebecca. Oh. Well, can we sell her to the slave pits again? I guess technically, yes, you could. You would be the greatest monster of history. But we could do it.
I mean, people would hate you more than when you, were controlled by Doflamingo and slaughtered people in the streets. Like, seriously. What the hell? Yeah.
But my child, who I'm going to call Mufasa, can become king after me, is what you're saying.
Are you just trying to turn Riku into yourself?
Yeah, I'm slowly inserting myself into One Piece.
Anyway, so Riku is like, I'll just do the best that I can. That's all I can do. Until eventually the throne passes on to Rebecca. And Elizabeth's like, I don't know about this. I mean, remember how stubborn Scarlet was in her younger days. And Riku's like, what do you mean? What? No, it'll be perfect. Rebecca, who has had no preparation to be the ruler of a country, will be perfectly fine.
I don't know if she knows how to read and write. Like, did she ever learn that shit? That.
Because the soldier did mostly train her to defend herself.
Yeah, and then she spent the rest of her years in the Coliseum, where I'm sure her education was not their forefront of concern.
And she didn't exactly go to school. She just stayed in the house. Didn't she? Did she go to school?
No, I don't think so.
And I'm sure that Doflamingo wasn't really focused on having a proper education system while he was in charge.
Yeah.
Anyway, we cut to inside the palace, and oh my god, Rebecca's wearing clothes. Yeah. Yeah. She's wearing a dress, and she's got, like, a servant whose face, like, belongs in a fucking Disney cartoon.
I was just about to say, like, I feel like, yeah, she's, like, straight from fucking, like, Cinderella or Sleeping Beauty or something.
50s Disney cartoon. She looks so weird. Oh, she's like, oh, I heard about your father. She's like, what are you talking about? They say that Lady Scarlet ran off and eloped with the prince from a far-off land, and the King Rico had no choice but to pretend that she had died.
What a sad and horrible rumor.
Yeah.
That fucking Viola is, like, watching whimsically, like, ah, what a better story that was for everyone involved.
Oh, no, she's got ellipses over her head, so she's probably deep in thought.
Yeah, but I'd be like,
if you come to a person so that they can think ellipses, does that mean that they just got, like, white noise going on in their head?
Yeah, it's just static.
I wonder what they're thinking about.
I don't like roast beef. Let me cut back in for that?
Then we cut to the town center, and apparently the same story is being told to Kinemon and his friend. They're like, oh, yes, we're that from a land of beautiful lakes that was at war at the time. They shared a forbidden love and gave birth to Rebecca, but sadly the prince died in the war, and Lady Scarlet and Rebecca, Lady Rebecca, they were left behind. They lived here within the country in secret, and so the line is still of purely noble blood. And Kinemon's like, what a weird fucking rumor. But of course, as we'll learn later, that's basically, Riku basically spread that rumor at Kairo's wish because, well, that way Rebecca can actually rule the country as opposed to being the illegitimate daughter of a royal and a, well, asshole from the Colosseum, basically. Yes. Anyhow. They're like, oh, what's going on with the showers? Oh, they're Lady Manchuri's medicinal flowers. Basically, she takes, like, blood transfusions from people and puts them into these flowers with her abilities. And this way, she doesn't, like, just have to constantly cry and her own power is not being used. She's just transferring someone who's, you know, health, essentially, to someone else. Which, incredibly useful ability.
Yes.
Good on you.
And it, kind of gives a little bit of detail because Sengoku's like, oh, take some from me. And Shido's like, oh, well, you've given enough to heal 10 of the gravely wounded. And you're like, oh, that's kind of cool, like, to know. Like, yeah, there were, like, a lot of people really hurt from the way things went. And we kind of saw that in action. So it's kind of cool seeing it addressed. Also, yeah. Because she's like, oh, that's great. He's like, oh, well, maybe I should go for 20.
Shut up. Fucking sucker for the cute tiny thing. Yeah, it's actually a cool kind of thing too, because like we see like the flower sort of emerging from them, from someone as she's doing it, like a little
dandelion.
Yeah, and then like it gets absorbed into someone's wound too. Anyway, we also cut to Kairos' house, and they're basically discussing stuff like, oh yeah, there's rumors that, you know, Rebecca's father was a prince. And Luffy basically says, what's that about? Also, I can't believe Sabo's gone. Also, we've got to go after Sanji's team. And he's doing this while stuffing his face, while one of his eyes is closed, and one of his nostrils is producing a snot bubble, as in he is asleep. And so Zoro's
And he's
like,
crying.
Yeah. So Zoro's like, are you angry, crying, hurrying, sleeping, or eating? Just do one at a time.
I love the idea he's doing all of these at once.
He's sleeping while also being really angry, while also eating.
While crying.
While also crying.
While running, because he has to hurry. I love the way he describes it too, like, what was that about? Plus I'm sad Sabo's gone. Plus I'm gonna chase after Sanji's team. Like, oh,
this is totally unfair. Rebecca stands, they all start to...
Oh, Luffy, you'll never not be funny to me.
I'll be right back real quick.
Oh, okay. And so we see the rest of the house. Bellamy's in there, Robin, all that. And Kraus talks like how he's the one who started the rumor. The only people who know the truth of Rebecca's birth are some of the royal family and some of the Don Quixote family who discovered the facts. And the only thing the country knows about her is her mother. He spread the rumor so it wouldn't be revealed that that he's the father, because he basically didn't want to taint the royal family line by having a criminal be known to be as part of the family.
Right. But Luffy, of course, doesn't understand this because he's Luffy. So, you know, he's like, oh, how can that possibly be for the best? And does Rebecca know about this? And Kairos is like, I sent her a letter detailing the truth of my life. She might look down upon me for my choice, but she is still a child. I won't have her future happiness ruined over a temporary fit of emotion. King Riku understood and agreed with my point of view. So Zoro kind of and Usopp kind of like look over at Luffy, who is angrily eating bread. And they're like, he's not happy with that at all, I guess.
And then shut up, because Bartolomeo shows up.
Bartolomeo bursts in and he's like, ah, Mr. Zoro, oh, Mr. Luffy's awake, good morning, Captain. And also, simultaneously, Kairos is getting a call from Leo of the Tantata, and Bartolomeo, meanwhile, is reacting to the presence of five Straw Hats in the room, and he's like, oh, it's like a laser beam of awesomeness. Oh, I can't barely even see. They're so great. Ah, if I ever happen to see the whole Straw Hat All-Stars line up at once, I might just go blind.
I fucking love Bartolomeo so much.
So I'm just like, just say what you came to say, and Bartolomeo immediately snaps out of it, and he's like, oh, movement in the Navy tent. I think this fight might be in danger soon. Vice Admiral Suru, the Great Advisor's there. Sengoku, the previous fleet admiral's there. And Franky's like, oh, shit. And Usopp says, oh, God, what are they doing? Oh, why can't they just leave us alone? Go home! And Leo basically reports the same to Kairos. As we cut back to Fujitora and see that he has rolled, instead of a 1 for the last time, he's rolled a 6. So he says, to all naval forces, the Straw Hat crew, Trafalgar Law, and all criminals harbored within the Royal Palace are to be rustled up at once. And so they're like, but we don't have the authority to invade the palace. And he's just like, just do it. You know, I'll take full responsibility for this. So he's chosen to actually act after basically giving one night's respite to Luffy to recover, essentially. Kairos is like, oh, the Navy's coming. Usopp starts panicking. And Kinemon's like, why aren't they only moving now? We've been ready to escape for days. We've had plans in place. They could have come at us at any time. Usopp is like, what about our ship? How are we going to leave? But according to basically everyone who's in on stuff, things are in place. They're ready to move out. It seems like only the Straw Hats don't actually know what's going on, basically.
And then we get glimpses across the town to the different members of the groups that Luffy's helped during this, seeing that they're in position, most of them in, like, cloaks and hoods. So I think we're kind of setting up, like, a big escape chapter where all these characters are going to help basically form distractions.
Yeah, Bartolomeo explains, all right, you know, you guys, I'm going to lead the way. Just run straight for the Eastern Port. We knew you might wake up at any moment and want to leave the country at once, so we got our people stationed in critical locations and stuff. So he's just going to lead the way. They're going to rush after him. And as we cut the Cavendish, we see he's got a rose in his mouth. Apparently he is chewing.
Yeah, munch.
Weird. So Navy starts to charge at the house just as the door opens up. And, oh, wait. Or is he closing the door behind him? I'm not sure. There's a click, and I can't really tell. It's a very small image. Anyway, yeah. So, but Luffy is also like, okay, can you stand Bellamy? And Bellamy's like, and I can run if I really need to. And so they're also talking about, Bellamy's also like, why didn't you abandon me, Law? And Law just says, Straw Hat said you were a friend, so I moved you.
Maybe Bellamy will join the Heart Pirates, Nick, and he'll be like, so it's kind of like a half Straw Hat, in a way.
They are part of the alliance, yeah. Anyway, they start to run, basically. Bartolomeo leads the way because the other way, one who knows where the fuck they're going. But Luffy immediately breaks off from the group and he's like, you guys go ahead. I've got errand to run. And he heads off on his own. And meanwhile, we cut to the palace and Rebecca is saying, where did Lucy's group go? And Viola uses her ability. Oh, that's what she was doing before, when she had her eyes closed and .. She was actually scanning the area. Yeah, okay. Viola just reports, yeah, they're about to set sail. And Rebecca says, oh, but I haven't gotten the chance to thank him yet. And at that moment, Fujitora said, we cut to Fujitora and he says, I reckon it's time to give him a full-blown test to see if their luck's truly run dry. So, seemingly, you know, he kind of likes Luffy, but he's not going to hold back, it looks like.
Yeah. And I think we're gonna get a cool chapter of the Straw Hats trying to escape, and Luffy's going to show up and announce the truth of Krios' parentage to them, and then Rebecca's going to be like, all right, well, I'm going to hang out in this kingdom as princess from now on. Bye, Luffy, and rest. And then
I'll never forget you.
Yeah. No, like, we'll miss you too, baby.
I mean, no way. You don't have a tattoo. You don't have a mark on your wrist.
Yeah, you're different.
Shirahoshi? Shirahoshi? No, wait, you're not giant.
What was the name of the Kaimi? Sky Pia? Yeah, I was like, what was
you're not a mermaid. No, that's not it.
What was the name of the Sky Pia girl? Kana, I think it was.
You don't have wings. That's not it either. Hancock. That's it.
I'm going to miss you forever, Hancock. Can you do your snaky love thing again? Just for old time's sake?
Do your thing where you look down on people but bending your head way all the way back? What are you talking about? You know, and you've got the tattoo on your
back. I said, do it! Click, click. He puts a gun, and you're like, oh, this got kind of serious and weird.
So when did Luffy carry a gun? Holy shit. Yeah, that's One Piece, though.
Yeah, no, good chapter, I think.
Time for the wrap-up, basically, the arc.
Yep.
Where they set off for their new adventure, presumably to go off and meet up with Sanji's group now. Anyway, let's do Toriko, which,
okay. No, did you read it this time?
I actually read it. After you told me I should, basically. So
I was like, it's a memorable chapter in its own way.
So Gourmet 334, 1mm Yuta. Yuta is the first to take on an opponent in
Condor Window,
which is a weird fucking name. Condor, good. Condor Window, I don't know about that. Yeah. So now they talk about
a window that only shows you condors, or is it a window made of condors, or a window only made for condors? Like, it's up in the sky, so only they can get to it.
So Yuta has pulled out this badass sword, and he's being talked about by the announcer. He's like, oh, he's the meal king. Here is his full course meal lineup. And notably, it's a whole bunch of very low capture level foods. So Condor is like, what? Your full course menu is a bunch of garbage. You disappoint me. But Yuta says, look, there is no difference between people's full courses. It is every individual's best meal. And I, too, used to have a partner, and my full course is packed with memories of him. It's an unparalleled, invincible full course meal. And Condor's like, whatever, I don't give a shit. Claws come out, cut the weird thing that they're in, like the sort of watery cocoon, and it basically separates them and puts them on either side of the seesaw kitchen. This very long and unsteady beam positioned on a tiny little stalagmite, which is floating over the flaming arena. And so they're like, oh, yes, each end is a unique seesaw that takes the form of a kitchen. Naturally, the heavier side is lower.
Oh, why, Toriko? You had such a good start to this chapter, and then you're like, hold on, I need to make this stupid.
In other words, if you're not the fastest at preparing the ingredient and offloading onto the plate, which I guess is... How do they offload it? Does someone come flying in and take it away? I don't know. You'll sink down to the furnace along with your kitchen. Round one is a contest of cooking speed!
It's just so unnecessary. I guess I'll kind of almost just spoil it here. I like this chapter for what we get from Yuta, but this entire gimmick of like, oh, and they're balancing in a topsy-turvy cooking arena, and Yuta wins by shifting it out on the other side. You're like, this is fucking so stupid and unnecessary and distracting from the plot of this. Like, it's just like a gimmick that was thrown on that's so unnecessary.
Oh, it's distracting, and also it seems like it's underexplained as well, because it's like, so do they just have to slap something out as quickly as they want to, or are they penalized if they make mistakes? Because if I were in this situation, I'd just be like, done. Okay, there you go.
Yeah, just like throw the fish out of the other side of the fucking bubble and watch the other dude be like, oh, you son of a bitch!
Wait a minute, I'm not done cooking mine! Ah! You didn't even cook your here's your bastard. Doesn't matter. You're dead now.
Yeah. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Dead man can't tell no tales, bitch.
Also, the fire is made up of, like, restless spirits who grab people and pull them into the fire, which doesn't actually burn them. It sucks the energy from them. Why is it called a furnace with heat if it's made of, like, souls who kill people? It's not fire, then. Whatever. Anyway, so, yeah, Condor is like, oh, isn't it cruel for you to be matched up against the chefs of this country in a contest of speed? And he, like, makes a Kamehameha ball, but then, like, turns it into a warp kitchen, which, whatever. He's like, I will now move... cook stuff real quickly. Whatever.
It's they're basically like, this is I'm gonna be fast.
This is called a leafish. Yeah, and my Kamehameha Hadouken technique that I surrounded in lets me prepare it awesomely. Yeah. And they're like, oh, and how will Yuta cope with, you know, doing something that he has never prepared before? But Yuta is like, I am super analytical and stuff. There is an order to something. And we get a narration and it says, oh, his veteran's worth of experience. He could use it to speculate as the method of preparing the leafish. His possession of cooking method patents on several hundred ingredients that require special preparation would not take very long to figure out the method of preparation for this unknown ingredient, no matter how difficult it might be. It's like, okay, he's really good. He'll figure it out. Yay. So he's like, oh, there's multiple layers to this and shit. And it's really hard. You gotta be really delicate with it. Thankfully, though, that's my specialty. I'm 1 millimeter Yuta. Time for a flashback. So, we find out that in his genius era, which I guess is like a blue period or some shit, I don't fucking
know. Yeah.
So, he was like, you know, oh, master, what is wrong with me? And his master basically told him, you know, you don't understand, basically, your own shortcomings. So go out into the world until you actually understand them. So he did. So he went out into the world, and he basically was trying to prepare ingredients and stuff. And he came across this kid who was hunting this, like, large boar thing. And the kid was obviously outmatched, so Yuta basically killed it for him. And was like, I'll prepare this meal for you and stuff. And the kid explained that the reason why he had come out here was because his entire village was sick. And so he was getting ingredients so that they could be cured. And so Yuta came with him back to his village and was like, I am a medicinal chef. So the food I prepare will be enough to treat you guys. And so he treated the entire village and was like, yay! And the kid, whose name is Vira, but where's his name? Where is it? God damn it.
I don't see his name here.
Where is it? Where is his name? Zen! His name is Zen. It doesn't start with a V at all. Anyway, so, yeah. Zen's like, you know, I want to be a gourmet hunter when I grow up, and, you know, I've got my full-course meal prepared. I've named it the Invincible Four Course, and he was like, oh, really? Yeah, it's a full-course meal that can cure every illness on Earth. That's what makes it invincible. So you should partner up with me, you know. The one weakness of my full course is that it tastes awful. Then you could prepare it so it tastes great. You know, you save the people of my village, so you would be the perfect invincible partner. And he was like, well, you don't even know if you and I would be a good balance for each other, so I don't know about it. Suddenly, Zen just coughs up blood. And at first he's like, huh? And then, like, what looks to be a very small part of what would probably have been a very terrifying scene, as he's, like, in tremendous agony as he continues coughing up blood. But we just cut away to his gravestone, basically. Yeah. And, basically, narration explains, in detoxifying cooking, preparation requires a subtle shifting in the blade when making it for children. The difference in it compared to that of adults is a measly 1 millimeter. And so, while no one in the village blamed Yuta because, you know, he had done so much to already save them, you know, they're like, look, you tried your best, and, you know, Zen gave his body to save the children of the village, I'm sure he is happy in heaven now. Presumably, I guess this means that Zen was the first kid to eat the food. And so Yuta actually corrected his mistakes for everyone else, so Zen was the only victim.
Only one that died, yeah.
Which makes it even more like, oh, that hurts. And so, you know, Yuta's master explains his earlier point when Yuta returns, you know, there's no mistake about it. You are a genius. You don't even know what failure is. Confidence that has never tasted failure is sure to mutate itself into overconfidence at some point. And overconfidence is sure to give rise to 1 millimeter of negligence someday. And that 1 millimeter's worth of negligence will result in irrevocable mistake. Such is the world of medicinal cooking. Until you understand that, Doko. So from that time on, you know, basically Yuta realized, you know, he was too inexperienced, and he vowed from that point on to always prepare everything meticulously and never allowed himself even a single millimeter of error. And so it's like, okay, you took the gimmick of this guy, and you gave him a really cool reasoning for it. You know, he doesn't do it because of arrogance. He does it because of humility.
Yeah. Right? And that's a really compelling way to make it a very interesting trait now, which was just a silly joke, has suddenly become a compelling trait, which is one of the best ways you can humanize and develop a character. Easily, you could turn this into a fantastic turnabout, too, at the end, where we see that this 1 millimeter practice of his is what he uses to perfect a dish, or perhaps save a life, or really determine that he is an expert in everything he's learned. Or he could just use it to murder a man.
Yeah, see, he makes the point as this is going on, where, you know, he's like, oh, you know, slow wins, steady wins the race, and, you know, he's like, you know, you made this great error, and for the record, you know, the membranes that are here, but in this field that we've created, the width of them is actually 1 millimeter, which I have no idea what the fucking point is, whatever. But the thing is, the way that Yuta defeats the guy is not by capitalizing on an error the guy makes. It is the fact that he uses his I am a superhuman abilities to control gravity and negate the gravitational space that they're trapped in and lift his side of the seesaw up so that the other guy goes into the flames and kills them. He cheats!
It's so mind-bogglingly fucking counterproductive to what the entire flashback is. It's like this whole thing of like, I was inexperienced and a person lost their life because of it. So now I've learned and I'm gonna murder this man. Like, it's first of all, the setting for it is stupid. It just makes no sense. Yuta does not win this by being a better chef. Like, that's what this entire thing was supposed to be. It's supposed to be a cooking contest. For some reason, it's also like a fucking, like, Olympics Iron Chef battling on top of some stupid seesaw thing that you added into this one. Like, there needs to be like a gimmick battle royale to it. But it's just the idea that you're like, if you're trying to build this idea that Yuta's meticulousness is what has now defined him, and he is so experienced because of that, that would be what you'd want to emphasize at the end of it. That he accomplishes it not because he doesn't have, like, you know, the other guy's faster, that's fine. But what Yuta has realized is that through time and patience, he can make things perfect. And, like, I don't know, the judges taste it, and they're like, oh, this guy's got a 9.9. He's perfect. He's almost perfect. But then Yuta, like, you know, an hour later is like, here's my dish. And they're like, that took so long. It's almost cold. They're like, holy shit, that's like, a 10 out of 10 perfect.
Like, yeah, like, there is, like, no time limit or something like that. So he makes absolutely certain that his is perfect.
Yeah, and you're like, oh, wow. You tied it in with the theme of their flashback, as opposed to it being like, that is why I was sad and I learned from it. Now you die, man! It's like, die! I don't know if you're a monster or anything. You're just an antagonist and you burn in that soul sludge.
I mean, this is like, you know, let's turn this into a less fantastic setting. Let's say that Yuta and Condor were in a cooking competition and, you know, the guy was like, I've completed my dish, and the judges were like, oh, this tastes great. And Yuta is like, you know, perfection is worth the wait. And, you know, he's like, he's really meticulously, like, arranging his dish. He's making sure every single square, like, hundredth of a millimeter is exactly perfect in every stage of the preparation. They're like, Yuta, you realize you have a 1 hour time limit to prepare your dish. Oh, shit! And then he, like, goes over to the other guy and takes out a club and just smashes his brains in.
Or, like, you know what? You could have done this still in the same way. Like, let's say you're like, no, the fucking, I don't know what their names are, the Blue Shell five Shell Chefs or whatever, they need to die. They're evil people. Why not have it? They're preparing something just to what they noted earlier, where if you're not 1 millimeter careful to the point, your food can be toxic or something like that.
What if at the end, like, the twist of the competition was, now you must eat your own dish or something like
that? Yeah, and, like, he's like,
that you have to prove that you have properly prepared it or something.
Yeah, and fucking, because by the logic of what they make you did in this, I like to think that in that situation, he just cuts the food slightly and he's just like, now I've made your food poison, suck it! 1 millimeter, bitch!
Or, like, we want to take murder out of it, like, Yuta gets his dish up, and just to make sure he wins, before the judges taste condors, he spits on it.
Like, there's really nothing separating the way this ended from if they were still in, like, the teetering seesaw, and they're walking over to, like, deliver their dishes, and fucking Yuta just trips him into the pit. Like, whoops!
Yeah, Yuta is like those asshole twins from Bambino.
Like, there's just nothing really separating him from that.
Except that Yuta's more effective.
Like, no one's gonna be like, at the end of this, like, I guess the Earthrealm chefs were the best cooks there were. They're like, I guess they were just more effective at killing us in our own games. What a horrible tournament we have set up.
I mean, Condor talked a big game, but holy shit, Yuta will just straight up murder you ice cold.
Yuta, don't give 1 millimeter of a fuck.
I was so proud of that line.
Oh, it was glorious. You gotta check out the Q&A if you have it, guys.
Anyway, World Trigger time. Chapter 112, Haruaki Azuma Part 2. So, last chapter, Inukai come across Osamu, and now, basically, they start taking shots at each other, each of them shielding themselves against the other guy's attacks, and we also get a brief look at their solo points. We see that Inukai has basically over 8,000 points with an asteroid and almost 8,000 points with a hound. Meanwhile, Osamu's got barely 4,000 points with the asteroid, so... This guy has way more solo battle experience and accomplishment than him, basically. So, Shiori gets in contact also with Yuma, and says, you gotta meet up with Osamu really quickly, but he's suddenly cut off by Shinosuke, also from Ninomiya, who just kind of cuts the area, the ground in front of him, and but Yuma immediately realizes, you're just trying to distract me. And Shinosuke says, yep, your opponent is me. Bye!
Later! Click, 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 click.
As Kageyura arrives, and he's like, hey, let's play squirts. And we also get a look at their solo points. We see that Yuma's got over 5,000 with a scorpion. And Kageyura has barely under 5,000 with the scorpion, but he has 10,000 points of penalties. So, there you go. We also get to look at the announcers, and there's commenting. It's like, oh, you know, Tamakoma 2 is in a bit of a pinch right now. Osamu thinks to himself, instruction from Arashiyama?
Yeah, Arashiyama, you got it.
Oh, I always get confused with Ashihara and Arashiyama, honestly, because Ashihara's name is similar to his own fucking character. Maybe he likes Arashiyama.
Yeah, possibly.
So, Arashiyama is explaining to Osamu, is like, okay, there are a whole bunch of things that shooters can do that gunners can't. And basically, the main difference is that shooters can control the bullets before they shoot. You probably do it unconsciously, but shooters are able to make bullets float or scatter before shooting them. So if you get close enough to use this technique, there's a higher possibility for you to successfully hit your opponent. However, when you battle a gunner, the shooter has to get close in order to distract it. And the gunner has an advantage with more distance. The difference being, gunners have guns.
Yeah.
Shooters have little floaty orbs. Yeah. So someone's like, okay, I have to get close, but I can't really move around very well in these conditions because of the fucking snow. So they're like, yep, he's kind of fucking screwed. Kaku's saying, yeah, he's got low mobility because of that, and if he keeps on going up against Inukai, either his shield's going to break, or he's gonna be sniped, so he's really fucked. And Kazama says, yeah, well, Mikamori probably knows that, so he'll do something else before that happens. And sure enough, Osamu immediately uses his meteor to blast open a door in a nearby building and flees into it. And so, like, oh, you know, of course, there's no snow inside the buildings, so he'll have better mobility in there. But Inukai's just like, that's okay. I can also move better without the snow. And he immediately rushes in really fucking quickly. And Osamu, however, like, manages to ambush him around a corner. It looks like he's actually going to, like, smash him with his ray gust.
Which it's kind of bamf. Like, he's just like, I can move better too. He's like, go fuck yourself! Just fucking, like, pummels him.
Inukai manages to stop the shield smash.
You know what, Nick? Let's stop. That is a far more masculine maneuver than I ever expected to see out of Osamu. Like, I was really expecting him to, like, turn the corner and be like, can't we talk this out? No, he fucking goes in with a pretty bamp move.
Well, we learned why he had to do this instead of drawing a sword. It's because he was using his other hand to manipulate the asteroids that he had set as a trap right in Inukai's blind spots. But Inukai still manages to block them. Because he's kind of pimp.
Yeah, he's apparently. Like, my shield can melt around and block it, so bitch, suck it.
Bitch, I'm on the top-ranked B team. Fuck you.
Bitch, you don't think I walk around with fucking a holster suit to myself to my suit pants without having some skills to back it up?
That sounds like,
I'm straight out of Japan, bitch.
And then, like, the fucking, why are you talking straight about
out, the straight out of Compton thing just appears over him. But, like, everyone else is just, like, moving in real time. Like, what's happening?
Like, the words are moving as he rushes around.
It's just shooting him in the face. Like, ah, you bitch!
It's like in Too Many Cooks. He's got his name in front of him. Anyway. So, he kind of has just a real, like, I'm impressed but not really line, which is, oh, you're getting better. Did you secretly practice? And Osamu's in a really bad bind at this point, as he can only shield himself. But then at that moment, suddenly Ozma Squad burst in, and they managed to cut Inukai's arm off. So Inukai's like, ah, well, you guys are around. Like, you know, completely no selling, his arm has been cut off. He just shoots at them with his free arm. But also, Shinosuke bursts in order to help out Inukai. And so we've got two teams facing off against each other while Osamu huddles and tries to hide, basically. So, you know, now it's just like, oh, there's five agents indoors. It's 2-on-2-on-1. Does Niyomiya have the squad have the advantage with two masterclass agents? Or is it Ozma Squad who's injured them? And Osamu's like, I'm here too.
Hey, guys!
Kako? Yeah?
Kako?
Koka. One of those two.
Kako.
She says, Ozma Squad's definitely got the advantage because the space is so narrow that Inukai can't really give support in that position because, you know, Shinosuke's going to rush in and he can't move to support him because he doesn't have the angle of the narrow corridor. Which, you know, it's like, okay, you know, it's just a small detail that doesn't actually, you know, play into what's going on plot-wise importantly right now, but it's always nice to have a little bit of these are how tactics work in World Trigger type of things. So Shinosuke actually ascertains, oh, these two were actually aiming for an indoor match from the start, so they probably filled the field with snow just to lure us into this tight corridor. So a multi-layered plan. Interesting. Kazama explains that while the two of them aren't incredibly strong one-on-one, Okudera and Kohorai are almost as good as his own squad in a close encounters team match. So, very high praise. And also, my team is awesome.
Yeah.
So, Osama's just like, huh, those guys aren't targeting me. They aren't. Well, in that case, I'll get my asteroid out.
I'm just going to not get murdered, and...
And Kazama says, and best of all, boom, and fucking... I didn't see this coming. Ozma fucking shoots through the wall and just kills Osamu.
Just blasts him fucking right through the torso, blasts the top half off. Even if you're just like, he can come back from that. A little Tron leakage, maybe he'll get a couple shots out, take people out, then bail out.
No, immediately Osamu's limit exceeds, and he bails out. Yes. And, yeah, because I'm going to finish by saying, best of all, Ozma Squad has the former leader of the top A-rank squad, the first sniper, Haruaki Ozma. And Osamu is the first to fucking bail out in the goddamn...
in the big match.
All that training that we got... And his first match after it, he does even worse than before.
Well, that's the thing, though. That was the point of it. The point of the training was that Osamu was getting better and getting worse at the exact same time because he was constantly going against his own plans before. He was getting more skill. He was developing better. He was facing, you know, his statistics started going up against better or started ranking better against that, you know, A-rank squad guy, I forget his name, but it was worth noting that was the worst member of A rank, who they said was probably worse than a lot of B ranks, and Osamu couldn't beat him even half of the time in one-on-one. So the fact of the matter was, we went into this match knowing Osamu was not going to be their ace, and he tried to be.
Yeah, and we got very little. Him. There was very little tactics planning. It was just, yeah, we know, we'll meet up. And he got into a fight before he could even relay an actual plan to Yuma and Chika.
You did see some cool development from this of, like, you know, clearly he had plans in place, you know, trying to put those asteroids in a blind spot. He is growing, but the crux of this whole little train arc to me, and I wish I had, like, made an actual, like, bold prediction on this, like, Osamu's not going to do anything in this arc, or in this battle at least. This one is about how the fact that Osamu's not at their level. I would actually feel, because I know some people have said, like, oh, this really cheapens Osamu's character. I feel it would cheapen his character so much more if he took out, like, four people in this match. Because his character is the fact that he is not at their level. He hasn't been, and he's only put in, what, 2 months worth of work for these people who have been doing this for years? I mean, that's a huge part of the series, is that it's not just about hard work, because everyone's working hard.
Yeah, so, there are soldiers who are trained to be their best so that they can fight a war, essentially.
And it's not the extent of saying, well, Somu's just never going to get there. I think there will come a point where he's going to prove himself as a huge asset, but it's a slow burn. This is a series where you kind of have two main characters, Osamu and Yuma. Yuma's going to be your character who's going to kick ass. If Tamakoma ranks near the top of this, it's going to be because Yuma gets some points. Maybe Chika blasts the building and crushes like 6 people, and she's like, woohoo! I didn't have to shoot a person, but I got 6 points.
And Yuma's like, you realize that you technically did bring harm to people by doing that. And she's like,
Well, if you hadn't told me that, I wouldn't have all the crippling survivor's guilt.
In wonderful, blissful ignorance, Yuma.
Yeah, like, you dickhead. And it's not as though Osamu got clowned by some dude who was like, I'm just gonna, like, yep, shouldn't have been near a window, dumbass. It was a guy who sniped him through a wall.
It wasn't like Osamu blasted him with everything he had. The guy tanked it and then flicked Osamu and he got killed.
Yeah, it wasn't like
Osamu was actually holding his own one-on-one, although he was getting overpowered. And he had to get sneak attacks to get taken out as easily as he was.
Yeah, and it was by the guy who's noted as being the best sniper in Border. The guy who was the first sniper, who shot him through a wall with no actual visible location onto him when he did it. And this is not... If you look at the last page, they show everyone reacting to it. This is not a surprise to a lot of people.
Yeah, it's not even a surprise to Jin.
Arashiyama, Jin, people didn't.
Ghidorah's there, like, who's the guy? Who's the guy in the panel next to Ghidorah?
That's the two guys who teamed up with them from the Tsukishima squad. That's the guy with the long hair is the one he fought a bunch of times but didn't manage to get him.
Oh, right, against. Right, okay, yeah. I couldn't recognize him because his face looks, like, larger. I trained with him for that? Great.
Yeah, like, it's, you know, a couple people are shocked, but a lot of people were kind of expecting, it seems.
I mean, Chika and Chiori are shocked. Yuma looks, you know, about as shocked as he ever does. Then there's Husei and Jin both down there, and they're just like, yep, someone got taken out.
Well, Jin, I don't know if he's like, that's kind of what I expected.
He did raise his eyebrows a little bit.
He looks, I don't know, it's interesting. I feel like the Tamakoma bet, you know, if Tamakoma wins, then you do something for me. If they lose, I do something for you. I have to guarantee that's supposed to flow the other way. I feel like Tamakoma's not meant to come out number one in this. And maybe what'll happen is, I mean, it'd be crazy to think it would happen if, like, Azuma squad got the most points or something like that, then Tamakoma, and then basically, like, the way the rankings went, it just put Tamakoma as, like, number two or something like that. Like, something happens where Tamakoma gets, like, number two.
That specifically was...
Yeah, well, no, that's the thing, that Tamakoma will still lose, so Jin, whatever Jin foresees Hyosei asking for is something he wants.
Yeah, using his foresight differently, of course. I didn't even think of that. But, you know, this does actually add a tremendous amount of intrigue. Unfortunately, World Trigger's going to be off for 2 weeks now.
2 weeks. I feel like the next time...
It's going to be off until the August 31st issue. Yeah, so
2 weeks. Yeah, it's a bummer, but we'll we'll have to endure. We still have One Piece and My Hero Academia and all that. What I feel like maybe we should do for that episode, we might need to have Annalisa on so she can come in and be like, I want her thoughts on this. Because I worried
about
her.
Ask her the Osamu Shiori shipping question.
First and foremost, I know she knows what the right ship in that situation is, but I worried about her when I saw this chapter.
She's like, oh, Osamu! He's not actually hurt. It's okay. I actually feel more invested in the outcome of this match now that Osamu's been taken out, because he can go one of two ways. One, Yuma and Chika somehow pull this the fuck out and win, and they get promoted to A rank, and Osamu is basically like that guy Tachikawa's squad, where he is not ready at that level. He is completely unprepared.
Maybe that was part of what they did in introducing that group, is sometimes they're A-ranked teams where one person in the group is not up to the caliber of the other two.
And obviously, if he loses, then there are a lot... If the team loses, there are a lot of different ways you can go with it, because, like, okay, we're just not good enough yet. We've got to keep on getting better so that we'll eventually be able to go on away missions. And so then they'll basically have, like, a actual, like, training arc, essentially. You know, there's a lot of different ways you can go with this, and I'm very intrigued to see what's going to result.
Now, I'm trying to remember, in the past, have we seen someone who got bailed out returning to their team in the sense of, like, an operator or a, you know, like, some kind of, like, a radio contact? Because I'm wondering if, even though he's fucked up here, if Osamu could still salvage himself a little by relaying plans to Chika and...
Yes, he can do that, yes.
So he might still be able to salvage himself from here, and I think maybe that might be...
He could still play a positive role in the match.
Annalise is dead to me. She says anyone else. Anyone and Osamu works, and I'm like, well, that's ridiculous.
Aw. He just wants him to be happy.
I want him to be happy with one particular person. If it doesn't work, then you die alone.
Who will abuse him for the entire time they're together.
Yeah, well, Osamu really seems like a sub, so I think it works.
Okay, that's gonna do it for the recap this week, folks. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for the show. We record Weekly Manga Recap every Wednesday, normally at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Sometimes we do need to change it up, but, oh my god, I'm finally getting several weeks back-to-back where I don't have to do that now. Thank god. It's getting sick of having to be like, Chris, I need the show to be on Tuesday. Now I need to be on Monday. Now I need to be on Friday.
Now it's Sunday. Now it's last week. Like, wait, what? Go back in time. Hurry.
But anyway, if we do need to change stuff due to now unforeseen circumstances, you can follow us on Twitter. He is at RillaT, and I'm at YRiller of Time. You can also check out our past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com or on iTunes, where you can subscribe to Weekly Manga Recap. And also, of course, you can send us criticism or leave a rating in order to, you know, help with the algorithm, help us be book workers.
Yes, and a special thank you to Bacon Procurement, who says, I have followed Chris Royalty Larius and Nick Weiler or Time Freeman's Weekly Manga Recap from almost the beginning, and rarely have I ever been disappointed in an episode. They play off each other like grumpy old man, just 5 times younger and 20 times nerdier.
How old will we have to be to be that grumpy? Do you think that all grumpy old men are like 120? How young do you think we are? We're not teenagers anymore.
And we weren't even teenagers when we began.
Not when we began the show, no. I think when we first put ourselves out there, we were teenagers, but yeah.
Well, maybe you were. You're younger than me, right? Or are we the same age?
When you first started, weren't you 19 when you first started doing Transmission Also?
Was I?
You're a little
older. I guess it was. Since I started with the state when I was 19, and I got into Channel Awesome basically like a couple months after I got into the state.
Yeah,
I guess it was.
Oh, how young we were. Yeah. Anyway, so that. Yeah. Also, you can email us suggestions for each manga for us to read, and also send us questions for us to answer. WeeklyMangaRecap@yahoo.com is the address. Speaking of questions for us to answer, we recently recorded a Q&A special as part of our Patreon promotions. It's an episode that we recorded last night entirely consisting of answering questions. We went back and forth for a little over 2 hours and had a really good time. So be sure to check that out if you haven't already. Speaking of Patreon, by the way, you can go and check us out on patreon.com/weeklymangarecap. The next milestone goal that we're working towards is to switch to doing a fucking video podcast. So if you want to see our ugly mugs, or we're going all dorky over manga, then, yeah. That's one of the new little prizes that you can unlock, so to speak. Of course, special thanks go out to our title card artist, Steve Mann.
Oh, do we want to shout out the new patrons?
Yes, of course.
Just a real quick, because I noticed a couple people had mentioned, like, oh, I didn't hear my name get called. Just check. I think there's a way that when you do your patron, whatever you fucking call it, the pledge, I guess is what it would be called. I guess there's sometimes you might be marking yourself as, like, anonymous, like you don't want it to show up. Or you might be doing it, because again, unless someone notes specifically differently, either on our Patreon or emailing us, I'm reading it as the name that's given to us. So it may be you're one of those people that, like, we got, like, you know, a couple of us, we could have, like, Josh or Steve or something like that. You might be, you know, one of those people and it's not showing up your online handle. Like, if that happened, just, you know, shoot me over what you'd actually want us to announce, because we do want to give you credit for it. Like, we're giving to this week, Calm, Alan Ford, Luke Rawson, Pruitt Holcomb, Caleb Palmer, Wesley Kurth.
I think I recognize some of these names, actually. I don't know. Keep going.
I think they do in order, so I think we're good on this. Shonen Junkie 34 and Dominic.
And also, by the way, if you have, like, really recently become a patron, then we might not have your name yet, by the way.
Yeah.
So, but we will get to you probably next week. And again, thank you guys so very much for helping us keep the podcast going. Yeah,
and there's a little something here as well from Infamous. Look, excuse me. He wants to do he's doing basically one chapter a week is what he wants to do for a visual edition. And he wants to put up a poll so that live viewers can vote for which chapter we do during the week he'll do a visual edition for. So if you're in the chat room right now, basically he's going to click. I think he actually just posted a straw poll. You can click it. You can vote on which chapter this week you'd want him to do a visual edition of. Basically whatever chapter description you thought was most amusing this week. You can check it out there. I don't know if when when this episode's out, if the link will still work. The straw poll at this point right now is... Also, it's Infamous Plant, so it might be too fake. He's like, oh, I can't be bothered to look at it again after an hour from now. But if you do want to vote in the poll for Shits and Giggles, it's strawpoll.me/51965555. So you can grab it.
I know it's going to win this week, but yeah.
I don't know. I thought we had classics all across the board.
I think I know it's going
to
win.
All right. Well, I don't want you to say it.
And as I look at the straw poll results, I think I'm right.
You might tilt it in the wrong direction.
I'm not going to say what it is because, yeah, then people just be like, oh, yeah, I definitely want to see that. Or no, I don't want to see that. Or something like that. So, but yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of Infamous Planet, you can check out the visual editions that he and Felix Stark do for our podcast. You check out youtube.com/TheInfamousPlanet or youtube.com/FelixStark. It'll redirect to the right ones. I don't care about getting it right. Yay! Also, of course, check out our title card artist pages. Ugh. Steve Mann has so many pages to promote. Patreon.com/SteveMann. Fucking NeuroticFanboy.DeviantArt.com. And iDropBoobs.tumblr.com.
I'd like to note it's not fucking neuroticfanboy.deviantart.com.
Fucking neuroticfanboy.
Just in case you are trying to go to... he does a lot of porn, but he doesn't actually... It's not actually in the name for that one.
Next week, we will basically be not recapping anything except for Fairy Tail. So we probably have a good long discussion about Shaman King. There's certainly enough chapters to talk about.
I feel like we need to almost find, like, a third person for that episode or something like that. Like, I need to find somebody who...
I might know a guy.
If you know somebody who knows, like, a bit about Shaman King, definitely, by all means, have him on. Because I feel like an extra viewpoint might be handy. Otherwise, I'm going to bring up my cat, but he's been dead for 4 months, and that'd be really creepy. So I'll bring Scotia instead. And I'm like, Scotia, what did you think? Like, woof! I didn't like the black character. I'm like, Scotia, let's get out of here. That was Scotia, everybody. Like, wow, you talk and talk. and she's racist. Like, I didn't teach her that.
Well, then again, it does live with you, so.
All right, well, now, Nick, we jumped over before, but now I'm going to go back to My Hero Academia and get that joke out I was looking to do.